Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
Welcome to Indoctrination, a weekly conversation series about protecting yourself from systems of control. I'm your host, Rachel Bernstein.
Hey, Indoctrination listeners. Rachel Bernstein here. And I just have to take a moment to give a huge heartfelt thank you. We recently received a donation through PayPal with a note that read, a donation to share indoctrination with people in, exiting from, and considering exiting situations of control who are not yet capable of financially supporting the show. This means a lot. This means a lot to us, all of us here, and I'm sure to all of the listeners. Your generosity helps us reach those who need this information the most, especially when they're navigating incredibly difficult circumstances. If you feel similarly moved to support the show, but a monthly commitment on Patreon just isn't feasible for you right now, please know that one-time donations through PayPal are always incredibly appreciated and so helpful and so useful. You can find the link in our show notes. Thank you again for your support and take good care. Hello, everyone. Today on the show, we have Nikki G. She is a returning guest. She's a certified trauma recovery coach who helps survivors recover and thrive after religious trauma and cult involvement. She's also a survivor of multiple narcissistic relationships, religious trauma, and also a former member of multiple cultic communities. Nikki is the CEO of Nikki G Speaks LLC, which exists to support survivors with individual coaching services, an online community, and other various forms of psychoeducation related to religious trauma, narcissistic abuse, and cult involvement. And Nikki is also co-host of the podcast Surviving the Black Church, where she and her co-hosts delve into conversations regarding religious trauma in the Black Church. She and other colleagues have just recently founded the Black Religious Trauma Recovery Network, which is a resource to educate, support, and empower Black religious trauma survivors. And Nikki also sits on the board of directors for Tears of Eden. In this enlightening episode, Nikki G delves into the complex layers of religious trauma within the Black church, the deceptive comfort of quote-unquote church hurt, and the journey to reclaim personal agency after indoctrination. Here's Nikki G now. I am so happy to have Nikki G back on the show with us today. No pressure, but so that you can make sense of everything happening right now, if you don't mind. Thank you very much. There's a lot to cover, and I really appreciate being able to get into some of these subjects that affect more people than people realize and that are happening in a way that people are not realizing. And so I think you're going to blow the door open on a lot of things that people really need to hear about and know about for their own safety, for their children, for all of it. So, Nikki, welcome back.
Thank you, Rachel. It's a pleasure. I love this podcast. I think you're doing incredible work. It is necessary work, especially the times that we're in. So I'm just glad to come on board and assist you supporting survivors and people, like you said earlier, who don't think that this pertains to them. But we are all under the same umbrella right now in America and even globally to some degree. So I'm glad to be here.
So good. For people who haven't heard the past conversation that I've had with Nikki, please go back and listen to those episodes. And we'll also link them in the show notes so people have a chance to do that. If you don't mind taking a moment and introducing yourself or reintroducing yourself to the people who have heard you before, just so they have not only a sense of who you are with this issue, outside of this issue, but also what draws you to feel like you really want to educate people and do a lot of good prevention as well.
Yeah. So I'm Nikki, and I start off to say I'm a survivor of a narcissistic family system, but I'm also a survivor of 5 different cults. And we talked about that, I think, the first time I came on and described some of those cults I was in. Many of those cults, I would say, were more Christian nationalists in nature. I found myself in pro-life circles and 7 mountain mandates and understanding and getting involved in the trenches of what America is now seeing and dealing with a little bit for the first time. And so I was steeped into that for a big chunk of my life. And I've been out, I think next year marks 10 years since I've been out of my last cult. So I'm going to find some way to celebrate something.
Yeah.
I don't know yet, but I thought about the other day. I'm like, whoa, it's 10 years. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the lessons I've come to learn. I'm not grateful for the experiences now. I don't endorse we should just go through things, but I'm grateful that I'm out. I'm grateful that I'm still healing. I still have my therapist, y'all. And I'm grateful that I'm getting more understanding. And so in that, about 2020, 2021, I started on Clubhouse talking about spiritual abuse, religious trauma, cults involvement, sharing my story. And I realized, you know what? Maybe I should be doing this a little bit more. And so went and got some training. I didn't just want to rely on my experience alone and became a certified trauma recovery coach. I've been coaching almost 5 years now. And I do one-on-one coaching, group coaching. I also facilitate support groups for those coming out of these type of spaces and experiences. And I also, and we talked about this the first episode I was here, connect and have a heartbeat for the Black community, where a lot of these resources are slim to none, to be honest. And so I lead support groups twice a month for the Black community who are religious trauma and cult survivors. I have a podcast called Surviving the Black Church, and we are releasing our 2nd season shortly. Yes, I'm busy, but I feel strongly about what I do. I'm passionate about what I do because I remember, I guess, the first 3 or 4 years coming out of the whirlwind of 5 different cults. I was a single mom at the time. I didn't know what happened to me. I didn't understand. I just knew I was carrying a lot of pain, a lot of trauma. And so in that, I went and got help and got resources, but I realized there's so many people that have walked through these corridors of pain, if you will, and many are not aware of what happened to them. They have scars, there's pain, but they don't really understand the nuances and all the different areas of religious trauma and cult involvement. And so this has excited me to help others to see. Because before we can heal, we have to come into awareness. We have to come into acknowledgement of what we've walked through. And so I actually enjoy this work, but I take time to be Nikki. So this is not all trauma for me, but this is what I'm doing right now.
That's so good. And that's such a good example of balance. That's not something that's ever encouraged. In fact, it's discouraged. And so I'm so glad that you have maintained that, even though sometimes it's sort of hard to remember to do that. I know we have a lot to cover, but you brought up being certified as a coach who really knows how to address trauma. There are a lot of people out there who are putting on their websites or Psychology Today ads that they know how to deal with trauma. And it might be because they had their own or because they took a continuing education class, but it's different than really having the training and really understanding and the ins and outs of it. And I want people to be careful about who they go to for this kind of help. And if you don't mind, just even in a few sentences, if you can describe what you've learned about that sets you apart from someone who just says as a coach or even as a therapist, yeah, I can deal with trauma, but they really don't know how to address it. So what have you learned about it?
Exactly. Well, first off, the first thing I've learned is I'm still learning. There is no class or course or book that can say, okay, I'm done. I know all there is to know. I think just even in this field, it is still an ever-growing field. And especially when we're dealing with religious trauma, cult involvement, it is a fairly new field. I try as much as possible to keep myself abreast. But when it comes to particularly this arena, many survivors have a lot of complex trauma. So being trauma-informed is one thing. You can learn about it. You can read books. You can take courses. But then being trauma-sensitive is what I don't find a lot of people are doing is equally, if not more important. The timing of when to introduce material, making sure you're not overloading a person's nervous system, waiting until, how I frame it, they have their legs. Their legs are strong enough to hear certain topics, to broach certain topics. And if they're not, being able to sense that and tell that, even if they don't verbalize it. And then giving them the freedom to tell you and not get offended. Healing from trauma, recovering from trauma, it's a slow bake. It's a slow walk, at least from my perception. This is not something we breeze through. We take our time. I believe our nervous system appreciates that. Because when we were in these spaces and indoctrinated, it's like drinking from a fire hydrant. You get it fast, you get it strong, and there's that push. When I work with my clients, we slow down. We slow down. And if we have to stay with a particular topic for a while, it's okay. It's not a matter of what I feel like it's best. They are the best interpreters of their own internal system. And so I like to work with my clients based off of their timing and not where I feel they should be. I can have a sense of that, but it's very important not to push clients beyond their ability and where they are. That's very, very important. And yes, you can learn that in certain courses and certifications, but one-on-one, you start to develop, or you should develop, that knowledge. And if you feel like, hey, I'm doing more harm than I'm doing good, I have the title, I have the certification, let me pause. Because I don't want to re-injure people. Sometimes that happens and it's unintentional because you're working with trauma, things just can happen. But we try to mitigate a lot of those injuries. And if you have to step back and take some time to go back to the drawing board as a coach, even as a therapist, then that's what you do. But we're ever learning, at least I try to on my end.
That's so great. Really great. I think it's a protective measure. The reason that I'm bringing this up is I want people to know they're people who really are trained and also are humble in that they're saying, you know, we learn as we go. Same thing. I've learned so much every day from my clients, from the world around me. And that if you feel like you're with someone who's pushing you or someone who's really not qualified or someone who keeps changing the subject because they just really don't know how to address what you know you really need to bring up, you shouldn't feel stuck. There are options.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really good to know.
Yeah. When you look for different coaches or therapists, obviously you do your homework, but you allow your nervous system to scan them. I mean, it's happening anyway, but you don't have to put yourself in a position of they're superior and I'm inferior. And I'm just at the throes of this particular mental health professional. They know it all and I know nothing. You know your body, you know your nervous system. And even if you feel like you don't, connect with that intuition. And if that intuition tells you this person is not right, like you said, they're not stuck. It's okay to just pause or back up or revisit this at another time. But don't dismiss your internal communication and messenger when you are connecting with different mental health professionals or coaches.
Thank you for that. I know you also mentioned the Seven Mountain Mandate just now, just in passing. And I know, again, so many subjects that we're going to cover, but let's just start with describing what that is, because you mentioned it. And for people who are not familiar with it, I think they don't realize how far-reaching it is and what it actually means. And so if you can just spend a moment with that, that would be great.
The Seven Mountain Mandate, it comes out of, it is a mandate, it is an ideology that comes out of, and we talked about this the second time I was on the podcast, the New Apostolic Reformation culture. And I look at it as an umbrella, if you will, and the Seven Mountain Mandate hangs underneath that. But when we look at Project 2025, we would be remiss not to back up and look at these two areas, because they are crucial to what is in Project 2025 and what we are presently dealing with in America. And so a lot of it has to do with certain leaders believing, and a lot of this is biblical ideology, people's perceptions and their belief system. And they believe that God had to do a reset. And the way that the church, particularly Christianity, particularly Protestantism, that arm of Christianity, has been at a snail pace, and it is not being the influential institution that God designed it to be. And so these leaders feel like, okay, God has delegated authority to us as prophets and apostles who will get the blueprint from God, write out the blueprint, and give it out to first these apostolic hubs, which are filled with people who believe this ideology, and then to export it outside of the four walls into the states, into the federal government, and then eventually export it out into other countries and the planet. And so they are, I'm trying to be nice about this, but they are obsessed with this belief system. They believe it from their head to their toes that this is who they are, that they are special. And because they are special and God told them so, they have authority to dictate how this country should go and how the world should go, totally ignoring what other people's belief systems are, totally ignoring the other people's will. It is, quote unquote, my way or the highway. And this is the root of what they believe. It's rooted in a lot of delusion. It's rooted in a lot of grandiose, so the narcissism word out there, a lot of grandeur, the ego is very inflated. I am special. I have been told. I've had these mystical experiences. And therefore, because you haven't, you need to listen to me because I have the knowledge that is necessary to take this country and this world to where it needs to be. So that is the crux of where the leadership is with this culture, this NAR culture, New Apostolic Reformation. But they crafted and honed down a little bit more, and they came up with what they call the Seven Mountain Mandate, which is not obviously mountains, but it's seven spheres of society that they feel are crucial that need to be influenced by this ideology if they're going to get to their goal. Those seven mountains are government, the mountain of government or the sphere of government, of education, of family, arts and entertainment, religion, media, and business. And there are other arenas and spheres of society, but a lot of them are coupled under these seven mountains. And so in their mind, the enemy or the devil's people have been at the apex of these mountains, and they've been leading out, and they have been cultural influencers and societal influencers, and the church has been down at the bottom of the mountain, not being effective, not creating societal change. And God is asking for a new reformation for those at the bottom to start making their way up to the top. Once you get to the top, you can influence society and change it the way they see fit. That's how they feel. And so they started to come up with strategy. And this is decades in the making. Project 2025 didn't just come around a few years ago. There are people who have had this belief system that I'm describing for decades. And then some of them had the political fortitude and had the law degrees and had all of the, they were set in the right places to begin to craft an ideology that was more practical and can be implemented. And that is where we presently are right now.
Okay. It is incredible for people to be so confident, to be so sure that they know what everyone needs to know and they have the answer for everyone. And I know there are a lot of people who feel that way. And there are a lot of people who don't see why other people might have an issue with that, because I think they think they're doing what's right and what's good for everyone. And I think they feel very overly confident about having the answer. I mean, there's so much irony in it there, especially if they're against all these demonic forces that are influencing. The thing to do is not to just be a counter-influence and to be another influencer. I think it is to help people learn to think for themselves and see how to question someone in a position of authority, or to not be taken in by media messages, and to really help a person be empowered. But I feel like they see people being pulled one way and then they're just wanting to pull them another way. And so I don't know how that's necessarily different. It's like why I don't do the old-fashioned deprogrammings of just grabbing someone out of a cult that they've been grabbed into and putting them in a van. Like, how am I any different?
Exactly.
In some situations, fine, if you're going to be saving someone's life, they're about to go through a mass killing. But okay, so we'll talk about those details. But typically, what am I doing to help people really see and learn? It feels like when people say, I have the answer and I know what everyone needs, from a psychological perspective, yes, it comes across like narcissism for sure. And I also see it as an outgrowth of anxiety that they might not want to admit to, but it's like I hear them saying, we won't be able to tolerate the anxiety that comes up in us when people have free will, because they won't make decisions for themselves that we think they should make. Because if they make the decisions we want them to make, then we have control and then we have a homogeneous world. And that helps relieve our nervous system. I see it as anxiety driven.
That's good. That is really good. It's, I can't coexist knowing that someone else could actually think differently than me. And that could impact my personal world and my biblical worldview. Therefore, I must exert coercive control. Therefore, I must come up with policies to control the situation so that can squelch my anxiety and soothe my anxiety. And these are maladaptive coping mechanisms, absolutely. But it's crazy. And, you know, listening to you describe this, this was me, Rachel. I know people probably wouldn't believe it. This is how much work I've really done on myself. I'm not 100%, but during these almost 10 years, I had to come out of, if you will, almost like a spell or this bind in my mind that I am elite and I know better. I know so much. I know for everyone. And they may not know yet what's good for them, but I know what's good for them because I've been in the trenches and I've prayed and I've fasted. And therefore, they don't know right now, but I'm going to help them know. So I'm going to be supporting organizations that take away free will of a woman's body. I'm going to support organizations financially that go against people's decision-making for their family, for what college they want to, for their sexual orientation, because I know better. A lot of these organizations, this NAR culture is very elitist. There's so much elitism in there. There's so much pride and this piety that there's that anxiety, yes, but added to that, there's this, I know better for you than you even know for yourself. Why? Because the devil has your mind and he's hoodwinked you and you think going for a glass of wine at night is appropriate. You should be in church praying or you should be on the front line. And so, and it's a subconscious thing, unless you're some of these malignant leaders, malignant narcissistic cult leaders, where I think a lot of them are conscious of this. But for me, this is what I was taught. This is the way that pleases God. This is what I'm supposed to do to enact change. I was not one of those Christians when I was in that world I wasn't content with just going to church, reading the Bible, being a good person, at least trying to, and taking care of family and friends. And that was it. I was young when I got into a lot of this, which is typical for cult involvement. They go after the young because we're passionate. We want to enact change. We want to make a difference. And I gravitated to all of that. And I just drank it all and just going out there and just trying to help other people to see all of this. And this is part of the culture dynamic. And so when they find themselves in this culture and then saying, hey, those seven mountains, we need people to go into the mountain of government. Start running for your local offices in your area. Start running to be part of the Board of Education in your town. Start running to be a judge. Start going to law school so you can maybe one day make it to the Supreme Court, or you can enact these ideologies. This is what they've been doing for decades, and we're just getting wind of it collectively in this country.
Oh my goodness. And I'm so glad we are. And I'm so glad we're able to start seeing what's been happening, even though it is tip of the iceberg. When you said, you know, that was me, there is something that can feel like a real loss when you have that. I was talking about this on the podcast a little while back, that there is this ad for a company called California Psychics. And so they even have ads on. Okay. They even have ads on CNN, whatever. It is interesting. They hired a PR firm that consulted with psychologists and social psychologists to know what words to use to get people to get drawn in. And the word certainty is their tagline, knowing the joy of certainty. That is something that draws people. And it's just the sense of knowing. It feels really good.
It does.
It can be kind of intoxicating and hard to give that up, I would assume.
Yeah, especially when we live in a world of uncertainty, when we live in a world where we feel like our governmental leaders are not telling the truth. What is the origin of this? How did COVID come to be? You're not giving me answers. Let me find it with some guru on Instagram that's talking a lot about this stuff and had knowledge before it happened. So I'm going to run that way. Or, you know, I'm going to run to the conspiracy theories that say blah, 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 because it feels good, because it's answering my questions, it's helping me. You know, at the end of the day, as human beings, safety is such a paramount basic need. We want to feel safe internally and obviously externally. And so we will go and connect and believe sometimes the craziest things just so we can feel safe. This is how cult leaders get in, because they understand that we as human beings need that. They try to provide that, but it's all smokescreen. And even how Project 2025 and everything has been pushed, this is to help us stay safe as a country, America first. This is about us. We're not allowing these other countries to take over. We're going to stick our chest out so we can feel good about ourselves. And so the language, the manipulative language, is definitely there to make people feel like, okay, they have my best interest in heart, but there's a lot of whitewashing of the original intent behind a lot of what's going on today. So, yeah.
Exactly. So that was perfect segue. I was just going to ask you about language and manipulative language and how that plays a role here and how powerful it is in the subterfuge, in the deception, in keeping blinders on and making people feel something or feel that this is safe. It's like people who will feel safe within a cultic system and then they don't realize until they leave that they're actually getting a lot safer outside of it. And just as a human being in the world, and that they have a voice and they can act on their own behalf and have to give consent for things. There's so many different ways that people are able to feel like I'm taking this agency back over my life, haven't been able to have in a cult. So here I am actually feeling safer in the world that I was told I'd be less safe in. And people don't know until they leave, but it takes a lot of bravery to leave. So let's talk about the language. So what have you noticed here? I know that just the idea of safety too, that's a big one here, but what other words or phrases or thoughts are being used here in a manipulative way?
I mean, practically everything.
Wow.
I don't think that the framers of Project 2025, I don't think that they're trying to hide it anymore. I think it's obvious manipulation at this point. And there's a lot of authoritarianism involved. There's theocratic Christian nationalists, obviously nationalism involved. There's even, we can see some markers of a soft launching into fascism a little bit as well with a lot of the policies and what they're planning on doing. And it saddens me, not that we're dedicating, but if I could dedicate an episode to anybody, it would be those who come out of religious trauma, who come out of cults where this language feels very familiar to our nervous system. It exacerbates our anxiety, exacerbates our fears, because we know what it feels like to be under this type of rhetoric that is really anti-autonomy, it's anti our agency, it's anti-choice. They know it though. And I think they're in a place where they don't care. And they're just going to just bulldoze and get their agenda in because they feel like they have the power to do so. A lot of the language, as far as like, you'll hear, we're going to restore law and order. So we have to get all the bad guys out. So we're just going to open a door to El Salvador and we're just going to send them all over there, which that just breaks my heart. And the desire for the leader of all of that prison in El Salvador, for him to build more, because quote unquote, from our president, we're going to be having a lot more sent over. Things like that exacerbate fears. I want to be delicate because keeping up with all of this, it can really be jarring to our nervous system. And I'm going to be honest, I keep up and then I pull out and then I dip my finger in and I come out, because to just totally consume yourself with it, which is another thing which becomes, I'm trying to cope because I want to be safe. So I need to know everything they're doing that I can know what to do. And to be honest, that's kind of impossible. We'll talk about tips later on how we navigate this, but it's kind of impossible to do that because they're always moving the goalposts.
They are. Yes. And I'm glad you mentioned that. So just feel rest assured, anyone listening, that we are going to spend the last bit of time talking about how to handle all of this, maybe how to absorb it or how to deflect some of it, how to stay in balance. I think it's a necessary part of a discussion like this, really necessary just for mental health, and also so that people don't feel so overwhelmed that they tune everything out and then they're not aware of what's happening, which is not so safe.
Yeah. So you'll hear stuff like, oh, we're defending religious liberty. But the truth is they're enforcing Christian nationalist policies, NAR policies, Seven Mountain Mandate policies. We're trying to protect the children. We want to get the bad guys out, the drug dealers out, but they're really opening up the door for total control. They're planning on giving full rights to law enforcement without any kickback or any parameters where they have to be accountable to the American public as well. We hear a lot of this being a patriot and doing your patriotic duty, standing up for America. So it's very euphoric for some people who really care about this nation. I understand that people exist in this country that really, really care about this country. But even that can be intoxicating. And even that, where people can be so consumed with that, that now you're only seeing your, and in this case, biblical worldview, that you are totally forgetting about the rest of the country that may not feel the same way you feel. I find that in a lot of organized religions, we are highlighting Christianity because a lot of this is coming from Christianity. There is this notion that, like I said earlier, it's my way or the highway. And so I know what's right for you. And therefore, I'm just going to just bulldoze and just put whatever I want in order. And Trump, our President Trump, I was scared of this term because the first term, I think he wasn't doing much governing. He was more on the defending himself and things of that nature and getting in arguments with people. But this term, you can tell the agenda has been stacked and ready to go. He's not even in his first 100 days yet. I think we're maybe at 93 or 94. And at this point, presently, 41% of Project 2025 has already been implemented.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
41%. Yeah, 41% has already been implemented. I believe he's written over 130 executive orders at this present moment. And about 60% of that comes from Project 2025. So the president that ran on, I don't know what you're talking about, this does not matter to me, I haven't read it, from day one, even his governing through executive order exclusively is part of the Project 2025 mandate, that the president of the United States shall rule or govern through this, bypassing Congress. And so what we have heralded as the three branches of government in this country and having a balance of power, that has been eroded. And unfortunately, it is the executive branch that is at the helm of restructuring what we know to be how our government has functioned for I don't know how many years. They are going to use manipulative language to push through what they want, but they're also using authoritative language to say, whether you like it or not, this is what we're going to do. And I think that's what keeps people feeling very unsettled and feeling helpless and often hopeless as what can we do? I don't have all the solutions. If I did, maybe I should be in politics, but we'll talk about some of what we can do later. This is what we're doing. And this language of we're doing it for the people, we're doing it for the children, we're doing this for the American family. From my research, majority of those executive orders, majority of the implementation of Project 2025 is in the federal government arena, in the trade arena. They have yet to really go full throttle into the family mountain, if you will. And part of what they want to do with that, particularly, they want to establish marriage between woman and man only. They want to totally excommunicate LGBTQIA plus community, but they want to enact a national ban against abortion. And so they haven't fully touched it yet. I just read something today about possibly the federal government issuing money for those who would actually have children because the birth rate is so low in this country. So now we're given financial incentive to populate this country even more because they're going after that family mountain, that mandate, woman and child only, many children, and no contraceptives, no abortions. It's very scary.
It is very scary. And with all the changes that are being made, I wonder how many affect men versus affect women, right? I mean, usually it's way disproportionate and the women really, really suffer. So what have you seen here? Is it the same here?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Remember, a lot of the motive behind what Project 2025 is has stemmed from the Seven Mountain Mandate. It has stemmed from the NAR culture, which is very patriarchal in nature. It is not about equal rights for women, equal rights for minorities, equal rights for those with a different sexual orientation. It is as if you don't exist. The patriarchal system is the man is at the top, particularly the white man is at the top. The hierarchy is like that. And if you're down at the bottom, perhaps what is important to you for your existence could possibly be erased. And I know that sounds so vile, but this is what's spewing a lot of them. And people listening to this may say, really? Are people really that sadistic? Really that cold-hearted and cold-blooded? I don't think people really understand what happens when people have a belief system and then they're in power with that said belief system and possibly not caring for humanity, lacking empathy, those type of ingredients with potential personality disorders and beyond just normal narcissistic traits or even furthermore, beyond even the disorder, now we're going into true intense, malignant narcissism. Most cult leaders are malignant narcissists, which is really the worst form you can have, where there's no empathy. There's sadism involved in that. There's cruelty involved in that. And it's just so unfortunate that people can feel this way.
Oh, it's so terrible.
It is.
We have a whole conversation about what happens when real fundamentalist branches of religions take over the government. There was this composite photo that I saw. It was a picture of women in different places in the world. Even just a few decades ago, they're wearing pants or skirts, or they're going to school. They have books under their arm, driving cars, doing their thing. And then a picture of them now, all covered from head to toe, some with mesh even over their eyes. They can barely even see as they're walking. You could just see the change and what happens and the difference in clothing for the men, which really didn't change very much at all, but that it's the women who just need to keep becoming more and more invisible, but without there being the education to others to control themselves. And so it shouldn't be that the women need to cover up. I mean, I have that issue in a lot of different religions. So it's placed on the woman to just keep sequestering herself over and over again without teaching that kind of control. So here, oh, it makes me really worried about what's going to be happening all over, and not only for the women and the men, but also for the lessons that the children are going to be learning, right?
Yes.
But seeing all of this unfold in front of them and normalized potentially in front of them. I think about that a lot.
Me too. That's why I think it's very important to teach our children, and specifically teach by example. We can throw a YouTube video on, we can read them a book, we can talk about lessons in history if they're old enough to stomach some of that. We can talk about what happened with the Holocaust and Hitler. But if you're not modeling love, loving others that don't look like you, that don't sound like you, that are different from you, if you're not modeling that to them, that is the louder lesson that they are ingesting. And so it is important for us to love those around us, even if they seem different from us. And if we have a hard time with that, because we're in a season now where what are our own personal values? We understand what Project 2025's values are and maybe this NAR culture, but what are your own personal values? How do you feel about others that think differently from you? How do you feel about others who have different belief systems? Are you trying to impose yours because you want to feel safe and not feel anxious? Or can you coexist with someone that thinks differently, that looks differently, that sounds differently? Do we make space for those in the neurodivergent community? Do we make space for those in the LGBTQIA+ community? Do we make space for minorities that look different? And how are we loving them and including them in front of our children? It's going to be so important, because whatever this regime is doing, they can't take that away from how we parent and the example we give to our children. Very, very crucial in these times.
Very crucial. I think about just the sense of entitlement of needing to change how everyone is in the world so that you can feel more comfortable. I mean, I even think about in a small example, and then I want to get to some of the other subjects that we were going to cover today. I think about how I know there's a diagnosis now called misophonia, and I'm pretty sure I have it, which is that there are certain sounds like chewing sounds and other things that really get to me.
My daughter's like that, so I get it.
And so it would be like if I stood up in a movie theater and I told everyone to stop eating popcorn so I could focus, or should I just put earplugs in, or should I just learn to deal with it like a grown-up? They're not doing anything wrong. They're not doing this to bother me. My world has not turned upside down just because I'm feeling distracted by them. And who am I to change what they're doing just for my own comfort? Let me modify myself if I need to. I don't know why that doesn't occur to other people to say, let me look inward, not outward, and try to change the whole world for my comfort.
A little personal. When I go get my hair done, where I go, I love the people there. They've been doing my hair for years, but they like playing music that is very similar to the culture in some of the cults that I came out of.
Wow. Okay.
I know a lot of people say, I wouldn't even go there anymore, but that's my trigger. Usually what I do is I make sure I always have my earbuds, my AirPods, and I put on what I want to. But because I have a good relationship with them, oftentimes if it's way too loud, I'll often say, do you think you could turn that down a little bit? Or I try to regulate myself before I actually reach out and ask them to do anything. And I think we're talking personally, but this is a skill that I think as human beings on this planet coexisting with different cultures and belief systems and likes and dislikes, it will be helpful if we thought about others. And oftentimes we don't. And I get it. It's personal. It's my issue. It's my trigger. I feel this inside of my being. You don't. But how sometimes other people don't know that. And it seems so practical and so an easy concept to grasp. But how do we live that out in our day-to-day life? Am I trying to impose how I feel, what I believe on others, or can I honor them right where they are? And if I have to adjust, if it's bothering me, then so be it, because I'm honoring other people's free will. It's very important in this, because right now we're seeing that's not being modeled by our country, by our president. And often what happens, like I said, in the example with the parents and the children, we can use that same example with the leaders of our nation and how that can trickle down and have a subsequent effect of people saying, well, my president doesn't honor other people's will, so I'm not going to. We start to get emboldened and think that we can do the same thing. And when we do that, to be honest, we are losing a vital force of our humanity. And that is what scares me the most. To be honest, with everything with Project 2025, a lot of areas that scare me, but we're losing our humanity, Rachel. And it's going to take us to become conscious of this. I don't always do this, but I said this to myself in January when the changing of the guards happened. And I said a couple of things to myself. I'm going to fight for reality. So no matter what I see, no matter what brainwashing is happening or whitewashing or manipulative language is going out, I want to fight for reality. And I'm going to employ people that care about me and I care about, that I trust, to if they see me starting to drift, they can pull me back. They have permission to speak into my life. The other part of resistance is I will not bend the knee. I don't care what incentive is given out, federal government. If I know it's inhumane, if it's against the will of the people, if it is discriminatory, all the things you can think of, I am not going to just play politics and just go with the status quo because that's what everyone else. I resist that. And I hold on to my reality, but I want to hold on to humanity. So it's this little weird thing that I do. I don't always do it, but I try to do it. I try to look at something at least once a week that is just humane. Seeing somebody of another race, another orientation, another perspective, loving on somebody else. You can find it. It's out there. Looking at animals, connected with nature, it brings me back down on the ground and reminding me I am a human. I live part of a human race. I'm on this planet. Happy Earth Day to the Earth yesterday. And I refuse to disconnect to my humanity because my leaders are doing that. I will have my own values, my own standards for myself. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. I will course correct as I need. But these are important values for us to hold on to when the chaos and the political tornado is trying to rip us away from these things.
Yes. Oh, I like that so much. I feel so much of what's happening here, I see as purposefully, like just throwing the ball that way and then throwing it that way and then having us chase after it here, chase after it there, instead of really seeing what's going on right in front of us. And we can get very distracted talking about trans athletes. Really? Like, that's the thing that really what?
Exactly. Exactly.
All righty. So let's all get distracted on purpose and to not fall for it, to stay centered. So let's talk about going into more of what you're noticing and the changes that are occurring. I think with the Department of Education, with the Commission on Christianity, the things that are really being dismantled or are being created kind of under our noses.
And I think it's strategic, the areas that they're hitting first and they're implementing first. I mean, obviously, like I said, by executive orders, and this is how they're governed, so they can bypass Congress, so there's not deliberation and consideration of what the constituents feel. And so there's get rid of those in the federal government who could possibly be a hindrance to this mandate going forward. And let's replace them with loyalists, loyalists to Project 2025, to Trump, to NAR culture, to this biblical worldview. And we haven't fully seen the replacement of all of these people who are being laid off and pushed out by the government. I have friends and family, and my heart goes out to them. But it scares me who they will start replacing them with. And I know in the Project 2025 document, they talked about different phases. And one of the phases is they want to have this database filled with those loyalists. And so that once they start getting everybody out, they can just go pull from this database. And Trump and those under him who have the power to do so will just start plugging in their people, even if they're not qualified at all. They will be promoted to the highest positions because of their allegiance, their compliance, and their loyalty to this culture and to this president. And so the next area now is the education. And it's so important because the less we are educated, the less knowledgeable of where we are of what's going on, the easier it is for them to basically implement all of these things. I mean, like I said, who wants to sit here and read all this stuff all day, all the time? I mean, of course, our nervous system doesn't like it, but they are banking on us as Americans to be distracted, to be entertained, to be led astray and not focus on it. The gall that they have, they're not going to do anything about it. They don't even know about this. And to make sure that they don't know about all of this, we're going to put perimeters in place to cut off the ability for them to learn and be educated. So we're going to make sure we just dismantle the Department of Education, making it harder for people to actually go and be educated, even on a collegiate level, on elementary level, public school level. We want to start to be able to implement the biblical worldview on a young age so they can grow with this and there won't be any contention to this model. On a collegiate level, the less that go to college, the less get educated. But the ones that actually do, we will implement those who are professors who are loyalists. And if these colleges don't employ these type of loyalists, then they'll lose certain funding. They'll lose certain rights. So this is information control. You know, I don't know how you feel about the BITE model, but there is such a thing called the BITE model and the behavior control, the information control, thought control, and emotional control. And this is information control. There's the privatizing of the student loans. So they're ending student loan programs, like I said. They know what they're doing and it's intentional. This is not happenstance. This is not, oh, well, our president is clueless. He's not educated. I mean, you can say that if you want, but the people around him are. The people around him have had this in place before he even came into politics, to be honest. They were just waiting for, like I said last episode, their Trojan horse to get in and then just release all of this. And so, what does that mean? How do we navigate then if people are unable to get education on the college level, if people are sending their children to public schools? And this is, again, and I was going to say this before you got into this section, but this is a good place to do it. Very easy, very, very easy to look at our leaders and say, boom, 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 boom. We see all these areas. This is authoritarian control. This is this. This is this. This is leading to possible fascism, restructuring and all this stuff. Look at the value system. I already said it. But I'm reiterating what I said earlier. This is the time where we as individuals shine, particularly in this country. And I say, America, what are you really made of? Is he a reflection? Is this mandate a reflection of America? Or is this a reflection of their community and they're trying to impose this on America? Now, I know you can look at the voting and say, well, this might be America. That's debatable. But let's say if it's half of America, The other half, what say you? How will we still continue to educate ourselves if, in fact, we can't be educated on a collegiate level anymore? If, in fact, they start imposing these teachers? I still have power, last time I checked, in 2025, to be able to say, hey, if I have a small child, I can teach them. I know it's not convenient. I know there's a lot of changing, but let's not lose sight of what we do as citizens of this country. Let us employ the uses of the library while they still exist. Let's put those documentaries on for our children. If you are on a collegiate level, get the books and learn about the history. Learn about what happened in the Holocaust. Learn how Hitler came to power. Learn the different communities that resisted and how they resisted. As they are stripping away certain things, there are still certain things we can hold on to and hold fast to them, in my opinion, while they're doing all of this restructuring, because we may not have the power to stop it. And that's the sobering aspect of it. I'm not obliged to say that there is another way. There could be, but presently, I don't know. I'm not a political pundit. I don't live and breathe politics. This is just a convergence of the world I came out of and seeing it now implemented in the world I'm presently in. But I look at what do I have at my disposal now and use those tools and those things to keep ourselves abreast, because the lack of awareness, the lack of education definitely will be our demise. Many people, and I think you said this in the beginning, Rachel, kind of, sort of, many people may say, well, I've never been in a cult. I've never went through religious trauma. That's your world. Nikki, Rachel, you do this podcast. Cool. Get a lot of downloads, but that's not my world. Well, guess what? We're kind of all under the umbrella of the cult of Trumpism. And whether we like it or not, this is affecting us. Mentally is affecting us. Emotionally is affecting us. Collectively is affecting us. And if it hasn't affected you yet, unfortunately, some way, shape, or form, with all these initiatives they have lined up, it will.
Yeah. Yes. Yes and yes. This is why when we talk about Trump, I don't know him as a person, which is fine. I'm good not having
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I don't want to hang out. But I do think that there are a number of people who have buyer's remorse who voted for him. A lot of people now, because they were caught up, because they're very good at messaging and they're very good at rhetoric. And I don't know. I mean, I'm a Democrat. We're not as good at cultivating the message that gets people to really have this sense of what we stand for and what we need in the world. But people can get very distracted by the message and not think about if it's true. They just have this thing that they can repeat and is easily repeatable. So they do it. And I think people don't realize how much they can be influenced by that. I mean, I think about all these phrases that are part of our lexicon, like the no pain, no gain, and all these things that, okay, but sometimes that's a really bad idea. But you think that that's the goal because it's a phrase that you know. I think that a lot of that has happened here. So how do people start to come to? How do you help them wake up? And I think some of them already are. And I also want to say this isn't about skewering Trump. This is about studying him as a leader, as an orator, as a politician, and the people around him who are crafting something and are all too good at it and are all too good at keeping people in the dark about what's happening. And I think that's why so many people who have been involved in cults are so triggered by what they see in the news and what they hear happening. And so if you want to know if something is cult-like, just ask someone who's been in a cult, and if their spidey senses are tingling, right? You just know you're onto something.
I said this, I think, in the last episode when I talked about NAR and everything like that. And I said, to your point, Trump is just an avatar. That's how I describe it. He's just an avatar. He's not a politician, even though he is, but he's an avatar. It's the people behind him that are using his avatar to go, in my opinion, way beyond politics. We're talking, and I used the phrase last time, spiritual colonization. This is about taking a belief system, an ideology, and just creating it nationally and globally without people having agency to say, I don't agree, this does not represent me. And so whether Trump realizes it or not is debatable, but he is the avatar. He is the person that is signing the documents for sure. But again, the culture I came out of, they are the ones that crafted this. He did not. And I'm not trying to let him off the hook, but I'm just making this widely known. I've lived and breathed in a lot of these centers and these hubs and around a lot of these leaders who believe and still believe a lot of it, which, by the way, many of them that presented themselves holy and getting all these downloads from God and so divine that they can be able to be the leaders in this movement. And many of them, unfortunately, are caught in so many different sexual allegations and sexual abuse and spiritual abuse. You scratch your head and say, were you really called by God to do this? Or this was your ego? This was some grandiose narcissism and these delusions and these fantasies to take over and control people. But back to your point about the people that are waking up, the people that have buyer's remorse. Now, a lot of people may disagree with me, but this is the side I stay on because I am a cult survivor and I understand. I do not, I told you so, to people that come out. I am hoping that one day somebody has the smelling salt, the proverbial smelling salt, and they actually wake up and see, I understand what it feels like to be manipulated by language where someone seems like they're going to meet your needs and help you and your family grow and make society better and soothe your anxiety. And you buy the package, you buy the ideology, and you can bring it home and you realize, oh my gosh, this isn't really what I wanted. I thought this is what I wanted. And so I am not one to come around and say, see, I told you so. You shouldn't have went to that store. You should have went to the other store. Should have went to the other side. I'm not one to do that, even though we're in what we're in because a lot of people bought from that store and that side. But how is that beneficial? Because guess what? We're all under the same umbrella right now. We are all under the same banner of the cult of Trump, so to speak. So we're going to need each other, desperately need each other, if we're going to navigate, exist, resist under this regime that we're under, possibly halt or slow down. We're going to need each other. And if we take all the energy and time to say, I told you so, rather than educate, rather than love people into the truth about their own intuition and remind them you picked up on some of these signals and help them to not feel shamed and judged that they chose us. Again, a lot of people will disagree with me, even people that are of the same melanin level as me, but I am a cult survivor and I understand what it feels like to be hoodwinked and bamboozled, and undue influence has been a big chunk of my life. And I am so glad people who saw when I didn't see didn't treat me like that when I came out. And we're going to need each other to come into reality to understand that the sky is blue. It's not brown. I don't want to waste time yelling at people that thought it was brown at one point. No, you see it's blue now? Good. Let's get together and see how we can stop this, or see how we can live through this, see how we can love through this, see how we can continue to maintain our humanity through this. That to me is more important than making people feel shamed and judged because they bought from the wrong store. I've never said that before, but I like that terminology.
Yes, I like it too. I like it too. Yeah, you have a lot of quotables as we're talking, a lot of t-shirts. Could be the Nikki G store.
Okay, Rachel, I hear you.
All righty. I want to see it. That would be cool. Very cool. I think even just before when you were talking about people just having self-control, moderating themselves so they don't have to control other people. It, to me, it's so much about being a grown-up. I feel like we're not seeing that. We're seeing people who are up to things. I'm picturing people over a cauldron or huddled in the corner. It's like the mean girls on campus. I don't genderize it, but that vibe, really just deal with yourself. Just think about how you can be a better person, not how you can control and manipulate. And I also think going back to the idea of kids here, where having kids of my own, I think about, I mean, yes, I had to deal growing up with the Red Scare. So we would have to think about the Russians dropping a nuclear bomb on us. And so we would have to jump under these desks that were made of sawdust composite. Like that was really going to protect me in a nuclear, whatever. I didn't question it when I was in third grade. But still, a lot of people have been raised with scares. And through family history and having a Holocaust history in my family, you always have your passport up to date. And, you know, it's just sort of in your psyche.
Yep. Muscle memory.
Exactly. But I think about the kids now who had to deal with school shootings, then COVID, and now ICE agents. So let's talk about nervous system. Let's talk about what we can do and what you try to convey to the public you talk to and even to your clients about how to manage this.
Yeah. Again, I'll preface it and say, I don't have all the answers, y'all. I may have like just a little bit, and it's more personal, my internal locus of control versus my external, really being able to distinguish what I can control and what I can't, since we're talking about control. I can't walk into the White House and tell them, hey, don't govern like this. But where do I actually have agency, voice, some level of power? And that is where I focus. That is where I hone in. That's where I shore up the foundations of those things. We talked about earlier the connection to humanity, which is going to be crucial, because with indoctrination control, with authoritative control, and perhaps a soft launch towards fascism, which I really hope that does not take place. But many scholars, many people have more expertise in this area than myself are already writing articles and research around this topic of where we could be headed. It is so easy to forget the important things that make us who we are, that make America who it is or who it used to be or who it should be. And we have to, number one, awaken to those things, awaken to those values, and be intentional about this is where I'm going to remain. I am going to be humane. I'm going to love myself, those around me, and others, even if they're not in my wheelhouse, so to speak. And being intent, and if I have issues with that, getting with a therapist, educating myself, connecting with people, and learning about who they are. So there's some individual things that we can do, personal things that we can do, educating ourselves. For those that say, hey, I've never been in a cult, that's weird, watched a couple of documentaries, I'm done. I would encourage you to educate yourself a little bit more. It is going to be important. You may feel like you won't walk into a brick and mortar cult, you won't join an online cult. That's great. You have certain skills and standards that would prevent you from doing that. But the type of control that we are under in this country, it does have cult markers. It does have Christian nationalist or religious trauma, or religious abuse markers. And so I would behoove you to encourage you to learn about cults, learn about authoritative control, learn about mind control, how to be able to keep our own agency, develop critical thinking skills. It is important. We talk about others wanting to control us, but how are we thinking about ourselves and thinking about others? Do we even understand what critical thinking looks like? When we hear information, when we read information, are we quick to believe it? Do we allow the emotionalism of how something is presented and the euphoria of how something is presented and just say, that's got to be truth, that's got to be reality, because I was moved. I was moved in 5 different cults, and a lot of that was not true. Don't let your emotions only dictate whether something is true and real. Look at the science. Look at the logistical part of it. Critically think. Ask questions. Do your research. I talked about it earlier. Fight for reality. If you know the sky is blue, don't let dogma, don't let indoctrination, don't let what you hear on the news tell you, well, it's actually brown. And if you think it's blue, that means something's wrong with you, or maybe you are an enemy of the state, you're not patriotic enough because you don't see that it's brown. Stand on what reality is and fight to maintain reality. Practice digital hygiene. We realize where we're at right now. This is something that I am trying to figure out how to do, even how I service clients and support others. I am rethinking how I do that. Watching what I say, I mean, here I'm just being honest and whatever, but I think I need to personally possibly look at how I want to present the information and where I want to present the information. Is it going to be through these social media platforms? Can I create something that's a little bit more exclusive and I can monitor it a little bit more versus all eyes on it? What does that look like? Being intentional about what I post. Being intentional, not in fear, not in paranoia, but being aware will be important. Engaging in community dialogue with some disclaimers, but allowing yourself to be educated with different things, but using those critical thinking skills. Staying informed as your nervous system allows. I don't encourage people to take this information, not really on the podcast, but all of this part of 2025 and just go crazy. Your nervous system can't handle it. I lived in conspiracy theory world for years, and I'm still healing my nervous system from all of that. Rachel, I was down so many rabbit holes. It's a mess. And I don't believe majority of that stuff anymore, but my nervous system was really damaged from being so paranoid of this is about to happen. This is going to happen. I see signs here. Okay, what should I do? And you're not living. You're always living in the future. You're always living like the video games or Call of Duty. You're looking over every shoulder to see what's happening. You're not enjoying life. So be mindful of when you do educate yourself. Read some articles, step away. Look at news if you want to stay informed, walk away. Don't fully ingest it because you feel like the more I know, the safer I am. That is not true. That is not true. Cultivate resilience. We're in some tough times, y'all. We are in some tough times with tough terrain, and it's going to take us connecting with resilience. And some may say, well, my window of tolerance for resilience is like this. Work with a therapist, work with others who can support you to walk you through what would that look like to expand your window of tolerance to what it looks like to be more resilient. And it may be taking baby steps for some. Others, it may be saying, you know what? I have the grit. It's been asleep. I'm going to wake it up. I want to fight the way I can fight that is more beneficial for me and my family and in a healthy way. But as far as mental health and emotional health, that is important. Having a what I call your self-care toolbox, and it's not all bubble baths and candles. It's, yes, having grounding techniques. It's deep breathing. It's journaling. It's going out in nature. But I also say it's enjoying life. It's going to the movies. It's enjoying pleasure, being in love, having relationships. It's going on a roller coaster ride if that's your thing. Going seeing a scary movie if that's your thing. Going to Greece or drawing, engaging in the arts. That will burn us out so bad as a country if all we do is fight. We have to enjoy our present day life. Otherwise, it will take us out. Rest is also resistance. Go to sleep. Don't be up all night looking at what Trump did and what's he going to do and what they're planning. Go to sleep. Allow your body to rest. As a survivor of a narcissistic family system and being in cults, I will tell you, narcissistic abuse, it encompasses chaos and exhaustion. And your body, a lot of times when you come out of these spaces, I've known clients and friends that they just slept for months and didn't understand why their body didn't feel safe. When you can rest, rest. Try to stay and keep yourself healthy. Find a therapist. Find a coach. Find someone trauma-informed, trauma-sensitive that can actually help talk you through these things. Obviously, Rachel's one of the best. She's doing this work, and I really am so honored that she's not just doing this in private practice, but she's expanding her knowledge out to others. Connect with those podcasts. Connect with Substack articles, because right now, information control is abounding, and a lot of articles that are written and a lot of cable news is not so reliant. It's not so accurate. I encourage you to pay that $3.99 a month to read an article from some journalist that you know is giving you some real stuff for you to go back and critically think on. Then there for those who want to get financially, save up. Newsflash, we're in a crazy time right now. I would encourage you to save up. And if you're able, contribute to advocacy groups, contribute to journalism, good journalism, solid journalism. Sometimes there are those who are actually on the front lines, those associations and those organizations. And maybe I can send a list for people to see if they want to donate to these organizations that are on the front line, on the legal front lines, or how we can push back on a lot of this stuff. Support independent media, support the podcast, support Patreon, where you can learn and continue to help others extend their voice so others can actually learn and possibly come out of the proverbial spell that Trumpism has on a lot of people. Connect with support groups. Community will be so important. Networking with those who are learning or understanding, that are creating safe space to talk about these things. You know, like I said, I lead and facilitate support groups. I'm going to be doing more, especially around this area of Christian nationalism this summer. I'm working on all of that. So people have a place to just say, I don't like what's going on. And I'm like, me neither. Let's talk. We need safe spaces where we can do that. Get involved in the arts. It is a form of resistance. If you can write, write, sing, do art, do dance, connect with these type of things. And I know you say, Nikki, what is this supposed to do to stop all this going on with Project 2025? Now, I didn't say I could stop it. But what I am suggesting are things that we can do to help support ourselves and support others. Community, self-care, making sure that we're okay emotionally, connecting with mental health professionals. And like I said, engaging and making sure, and for those who say, I'm political, I want to vote. If you are political and you love the political arena, some of you may be wanting to run for office to try to combat some of this. Some of you may want to get involved with organizations that are advocating for our voting rights as they're starting to erase those as well too. Those who want to contact your representatives, a lot of you are skilled at that. I encourage you to expand that and help others to know how to contact their representatives. Challenge disinformation, because it has been a lot of it and it will continue to increase under this regime. But I say all that to say this, again, going back to the root of it all, which is our humanity. It is important to maintain that above all, that I'm human enough that I can love my sister Rachel and others who are around her, and we may have totally different belief systems and things. We can have commonality here, but can I find something that I can connect with on a human level? We can have discussion and discord and love each other. Racism, y'all, they're going to continue to stoke the flames with that. Humanity comes in and puts a halt in it. Let us learn to love each other in these crucial times if we're going to survive this long haul called the cult of Trumpism.
Wow. Nikki, that was the most phenomenal list. That's incredible. So incredible. And I love that at the heart of it is really the heart as people, as human beings, finding common ground, or at least finding a way to remain human, to remain intact person who cares, who feels, who wants to do good, wants the world to be a good, safe place. During times like this, it feels harder for that to happen, but I think you're absolutely right. If you start with the self and you think about what you need to heal yourself, but also fortify yourself so that you can take this on in whatever capacity you can. I so appreciate everything that you do. And where can people find you if they want to be in touch?
You can find me, probably the easiest place is my website, nikkigspeaks.com. By the time this episode airs, perhaps I'll be having some webinars up there that you can avail yourself of. I really want to start educating more people around Christian nationalism, NAR, especially those that are still captured in these circles. And I'll be doing some more support groups and facilitating some more support groups. So just find my website. All my socials are there and you'll be able to find links. I also have a book, an ebook that I put out last year that's called Christian Nationalism and Its Impact on Religious Survivors. And so if that is you and you're like, I just need some support, I want to just know that I'm not crazy. I try to articulate this to people and they think like, oh my goodness, I thought that was a long time ago. Check out the ebook. I think it may be helpful. It is not written with a particular political official in mind. It is just where we are as survivors of religious trauma. So it is just a small ebook to encourage you. So you can check that out. That's on my website as well. And then the podcast, the support groups, all that will be there.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I so wish we had more time today. So hopefully we can talk again.
Another part.
Yes, yes. That would be so great. An ongoing discussion. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You too, Rachel. Thank you for the work you're doing. I appreciate it.
Of course. One more thing before you go. Thank you, thank you, thank you to Nikki G for coming back on the show to talk about something that is so frightening. It really is. I mean, you know, when I talk to some podcast guests, sometimes I think, wow, that's really a terrible story. And oh my goodness, I can't believe you've gone through this. And wow, this says a lot about the state of affairs in the world, etc. This issue of Project 2025 is so frightening. It scares me. I have to say, it scares me. And I'm not an anxious person. But there is this overreaching, overarching need for control and to be able to have these teachings, these biases, this level of control permeating everything and everyone. I can't imagine saying that about anything ever. Even if I loved something, I wouldn't say, and I have to make sure everyone in the world feels the same way I do or is influenced by this because I think it's really, really good. I don't know why there are some people who feel it is their duty or their role or that they're entitled to push this agenda in other people's faces, but also to do it in such a deceptive manner. When things are done in such a deceptive manner, you have to wonder why. It's like people who keep something a secret because they know if they were to tell people, people would be against it. Or maybe inherently there's something wrong with it and there's something wrong with doing this to other people. But treating the world as though you can just push something on them without their knowledge or consent is, for lack of a better clinical term, obnoxious. And so when you have these words also that are used that are to stoke fear, but also give this total misrepresentation of what is happening, I want you to be smart verbal consumers. I want you to be smart spiritual consumers. I want you to notice a phrase like, we're defending religious liberties. Yeah, people by and large, not everywhere, but people by and large already have religious liberties in the United States to a great degree. You don't have to defend them. This doesn't have to be something that you're pushing towards. Take a moment to notice that kind of language, that maybe the people who were talking about how they're helping to defend you are the ones who are going to leave you feeling defenseless, who are going to leave you with this feeling that you've been rendered powerless. So how is that defending your religious liberties? And let's define liberties. It's freedom. So I don't need someone to sneak their way into my life in so many different ways to defend my freedom. I mean, just look at this phrase. Just look at it as an equation. It does not come together. It's very much like when people say they're going to protect you whether you want it or not. Okay, well, you might want it, you might not want it, but it's not for them to decide what you need. It's not for them to decide also that they can call it preserving your freedom somehow. If what they're doing in the process is taking something away, but also, most importantly, I think here, they're taking away your ability to make an educated decision about the movie that you're seeing or the curriculum that you're approving or whatever else they're trying to push their way into. There's so much about it that's sneaky. And then on top of it, there is this feeling that they don't care if it's sneaky. They don't mind if it's sneaky because then it goes to this, I think, very alarming trend that we see in cult groups, in fundamentalist branches of religions, in some businesses where they will decide what's best for you. And they'll decide that it doesn't matter if you know what they're up to because the ends justify the means. That phrase, that idea, has been used where people have had war break out. They've had mass killings. They've had people who have really regretted because it brought them ill health or because it destroyed their country or it destroyed their family. There are people who have really, really regretted when someone comes into their life and says, I know what you need, and I'm going to make sure you have it or you get there. And I don't care if I hurt you along the way. And I actually don't care if I destroy your life as it is along the way, because I don't value your life as it is. I don't value the fact that you have other belief systems. I don't value the fact that you have already the liberty to say no. None of that matters to me. All of that is so frightening, but is really quite incredible that right now, here in the United States, we have a government supporting that. And I'm sure there are other governments that are run in a religious way that don't see an issue with this. In fact, they've already run their governments this way. But just look at countries that are run in a religious way that are going to impose religion on their citizens. Just look at how you see a lot of, unfortunately, these Muslim countries with pictures of women from the 1970s, 80s, even 90s, wearing pants, going to school, and now they're covered head to toe, and they can't see, and they can't speak with other women, and some are not allowed to leave their home. This is where it can lead. And that's not being dramatic. That's just factual. There is no end to where this can go. So that's why we're talking about it. That's why we need to make sure that we have people who are aware of what's happening so they can watch out for what's happening. There needs to be a system of checks and balances. And one of the things that makes people upset now when looking at the government in this country is that there are far too few systems in place of checks and balances. There are far too few moments of pushback that people who are trying to overtake the whole country really have and really get. So it is something that I wanted you to know about, not to make you afraid necessarily, but to mobilize you to notice it, to inform people, because that is the way that this might not have this sort of automatic glide path into becoming a reality. Watch out for these kinds of phrases like, we're defending religious liberties. Watch out for people who will say that they have all the knowledge, they have everything everyone needs, they know what needs to change in this country and in the world, and it is that everyone needs to believe the same way. That has never been what's been successful in countries in history, because it can lead to some frightening things. Let's not let that happen if we can help it, if we can do something. Thank you to Nikki G for informing us, for guiding us through this to understand it. Very much appreciate it. Take good care, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you very much for listening. Please support Indoctrination on Patreon at patreon.com/indoctrination. Be sure to give us a follow on our social media. Find us on Facebook and Instagram using @indoctrinationpodcast. And for Twitter, find us @_indoctrination. We love hearing from you too. So send us an email at indoctrinationshow@gmail.com. And for more updates on the show, visit our website at www.podpage.com/indoctrination.
Everyone. Everyone has a fave Wendy's Frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new Frosty Swirls and Frosty Fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to Frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC. Used with permission.